see you there.
Something big is going on here.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot,
paranormal, UFOs, true crime, and more.
We won't just be spouting articles.
I was researching for your entertainment.
The beginning of a new world.
The best guac you'll ever fucking eat.
True story.
It's basically like one day you walk outside and you see that the ants are playing with matches.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side.
Feel the heat on the top of your hands as you reach into the stove to take out the turkey. The cold air on the top of your head as you reach into the freezer to take out the frozen carrots and peas. Hear the singing of the knife as you sharpen the blade on the stone, and the searing of the iron as you press your shirt. Turn off your lamp, put on your best clothes, and join us as we dig into Omima Nelson.
Ooh.
Welcome to the Black Cat Report. It's me, Joey, first-time hoster, and here's the well-spoken, well-written Gilbert.
Hello.
The funny, lovely, and always main character, Betsabe.
Hi.
And the honey voice and wonderful Selena is off on a secret mission saving the world, and we can't wait to have her back next week. Today, on our special Thanksgiving episode of Thanksgiving Day Eats, we have Omima Nelson.
Dum, dum, dum.
All right, let's get into the story. On Thanksgiving Day, 1991, Omima Nelson murdered and ate her husband, Bill Nelson.
Nice.
But when do red flags turn into red floors? When does a model turn into a monster? Today, we're going to find out that sometimes the answers aren't always as one-sided as they seem. So we'll dig into Omima Nelson first. Omima Nelson was born in a poor southern Egyptian town close to Sudan in 1968. The government of Egypt was in disarray and corruption was rampant. Just 1 month after she was born, Israel had just defeated Egypt in the Six Days War. So things were terrible at this time in Egypt and for a baby to grow up in. According to stories that she told later, Omima's father was horribly abusive and sexually assaulted her, and she was subjected to genital mutilation.
That's pretty awful.
Which would make... Yeah, that would pretty much make any sex painful and horribly traumatic from then on. So yeah, that's pretty bad.
Like, why is that even a thing, you know?
I don't know. I was kind of reading into it. Most people were saying that they didn't want sex for women to be a pleasurable thing.
But it really, so, like, it's not. Like, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
I mean,
they obviously didn't have to do that.
I mean, like, patriarchal societies and just, like, men viewing women as property, you know? Like, you don't even want to have to worry about, like, in their mind, it's like they don't even want to have to worry about their woman, like, cheating on them or having kids with other guys or anything else. And it's like, it's property. I mean, it's such a dehumanizing view. It's like locking your car door because you don't want somebody to steal it. You know, it's like, yeah, she's going to be, like, so turned off from the idea of sex that she won't even want to cheat on me. And she's stuck with me. And then also, like, especially in those societies, like, our societies that get into genital mutilation like that, at least around women, like, on the same end, they make sure that, like, the men are the only breadwinners and that women are, like, completely financially stuck. And then a lot of fun shit that goes with it. Anyways.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they are very insecure people.
I mean, and not nearly at all to the same extent, but, like, we, like, here in America, like, totally do genital mutilation on a regular basis. Circumcision. Like, circumcision, super, super, super common. It does lead to decreased sensations for men during sex for the rest of their life. Like, because as you get, to get explicit here, as you get towards the tip, there's more nerves. And if you literally cut off the tip, like, so, like, we have our own practices, obviously not to the same extent and not nearly as fucking horrible as female genital mutilation, but just saying.
Wasn't that originally a Jewish tradition?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that started from Judaism, I think. From, yeah. I don't know how they got into that, but maybe it was a very similar idea, is that it's not supposed to be, the idea of sex is not supposed to be pleasurable. It's supposed to be the idea of procreating and becoming a vessel for a child, creating vessels for children.
It's like they and feel creating, a lot of shame.
Creating more believers.
It was also, I mean, I'd always heard it being like, welcome to circumcision talk, everybody. But I always heard that it was like an old belief, like based around like cleanliness, right? And like, Judaism's like one of the most advanced, like, or like religiously, culturally, ethnically speaking, like Jewish community has always been like way, way, way ahead of a lot of other groups, like in the same area. And when it comes to like standards of cleanliness, like that's why they got blamed during like plague outbreaks, because the communities like actually had practices around like bathing and what and like taking care of themselves and cleaning themselves. And like when the tip of the penis is snipped, it kind of like the skin that goes around the head like kind of goes back, and so there's not like a little pocket area there anymore that like, you know, grime and stuff like that can get in. I don't know.
Is the there... pocket so you can save the babies?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
The ones that I do want to say become doctors or president, they stay in that little pocket.
Oh.
I got a secret in my pocket for you.
Safe and sound from the world outside. Well, anyways.
If you think that talk was uncomfortable, just wait.
Just wait, yeah. So, Omaima and her mom fled from the abusive husband and moved to Cairo. So, you know, basically, they're in this really small town in southern Egypt. And Omaima and her mom were basically like, oh, we got to get out of here. You know, we're getting sexually abused. We're getting physically abused. And her mom, she's like, we got to go. We got to go somewhere. So when she was young, she goes, okay, we're going out. We're getting out. We're going to the city. So this can't be stated enough that they were also still in utter, utter poverty. So here they are now living in a big city. They moved to Cairo, which was also literally nicknamed the City of the Dead because the shanties were built among the tombs.
That's kind of dope.
Wow. They are basically living in Ghost Town. So they're little, small, little ramshackle houses, if you can even call them a house, were just sitting, would be right next to a tomb, a bunch of tombs right next to them. So they're basically living amongst the dead.
That's, yeah, I could not do that.
Yeah. Wow. So super poor, couldn't do much, couldn't go away. So she grew up in Cairo. In big city, and at the age of 18, she's like, okay, cool, I'm living my life, I'm doing all this stuff. She meets an American oil worker, and honestly, we've researched everywhere, but we cannot find this guy's name. I feel like it's been stricken from the record somewhere. he's not appearing. So for the sake of it, we're just gonna call him American Oil Worker.
Which just he was.
Literally out of, like Joe even hit me up and he's like, dude, could you help me with this? And, like, we were up until, like, 3:30, 4:30 in the morning the other night, like, just trying to find him. And he's just known as American Oil Worker.
Just, like, AOW.
The most generic American ever.
Either he's stricken from the record or he's just not memorable.
True.
So, poor guy. I mean.
Maybe that was his name. Maybe his first name was American and his last name was Oil. Or his middle name was Oil.
That poor family. They were just, that poor kid, they were just like, pretty much like, you're going to do one thing in your life. We're sorry. So they entered into a sexual relationship.
Just straight
dun,
up.
Dun, dun. Yep. So basically her family's seeing this and they're like, okay, well, we're pretty really, really, really conservative here. So they're seeing this and they're going, our view on this is that you pretty much need to get married to him. You're no longer a virgin and we don't think Muslim men would accept you as a wife. So they convince the two of them to get married. And honestly, just looking at this, this is definitely her family's views on this. This is not everyone.
Well, what do you mean by her family?
Just want to be
just
clear
like
about
her
that.
Mom?
Her mom and I think her mom got remarried in Egypt. So basically they were looking at this saying like, look, we don't think that any other Muslim man in Egypt is going to want you.
How did they even know? So, was she like, hey, I'm having sex with this American guy?
I mean, it's all the late nights in the tombs. She was running around and she couldn't, you know, she came back at midnight and she came back at 9 p.m. and they're like, girl, where were you?
You're going to have to become Mrs. Oil Worker.
Yeah, you're becoming Omaima Oil Worker. They're changing her middle name too. Yeah.
You got a little barrel in the bun? Well, yeah, I got a little bun in the barrel. What's going on over there?
So, once they married, they moved back to Texas, which her new husband, American Oil Worker, had a home. Obviously, because he's in the American oil business, he lives in Texas.
Obvious.
So, like all things with her, as you'll see, things literally quickly fell apart. They divorced not even a year after they were married, and which is setting a pattern for the things to come in Amama's life. So she basically finds this guy. He goes, okay. They canoodle around in the tombs together. The family's like, hey, honestly, like, we don't think anyone's going to want you here. But also, we see a good way for you to get out of this poverty because, you know, the American oil worker was, especially in Egypt, was pretty well off, and then came back to Texas, had a house, and was decently well off in Texas as well in the United States. So her family seeing this is like, hey, like, we don't want you to continue this life here as we are continuing it. So they're like, you've already... you two have already had sex, so, you know, in our view, you guys got to get married. Also, this is a way to get out.
You
so,
canoodled, now scoodle. Gotcha.
Yep.
wait. Is this another guy?
No, this is the American oil worker.
Okay, because you went they went to Texas, but then they got divorced, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
she's
back. I was just repeating it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, sorry.
All right, so she got a divorce, and then she went back to...
She's still in Texas.
She's still in Texas. Okay.
Yeah. So
what year?
In
was
the year. The year.
Sorry.
Now the year was 1986.
That is horrifying. She's in Texas in 1986 as a person of color.
Yep. So let's go into this. The year was 1986. She was in a new country, newly single. She's ready for it. She was 18. Yeah, she just turned 18. Well, she's 18. She was 18 when they got married. So she's still 18. Yeah. Yep. She didn't really have a strong grasp on the English language, which, I mean, in 86, this is probably the worst thing you could ever have, especially in Ronald Reagan's America at that time. And she didn't have any place to go. At this point in time in the world, the Chernobyl power plant exploded, killing 31 people and leaving 1,000 miles, or 18,102,857.14 hamburgers wide inhabitable.
I was going to ask. So, had you?
Yeah, had to do those calculations.
Thank you.
That is actually our measurement. We usually use hamburgers to make it easier for people to understand. So... mad cow disease, funny of that, mad cow disease in the UK started running rampant, which I'm honestly pretty sure the cows are still mad. The Challenger space shuttle became the first space shuttle to disintegrate after liftoff, which was very sad. And honestly, that kind of stopped a lot of the money we spent into NASA and into going to the moon. And this is the best one. The Oprah Winfrey Show debuted and ran for as long as mad cow disease ran. Which it just recently went off the air.
Fun fact.
Yeah. And as well as a host of other major events that shaped the world at this time.
So do you know or is there information why they got a divorce so quickly?
There isn't any information, just like the guy's name, but I want to say from things it just kind of seemed like she had a pattern in her life, and that she just continuously, because she grew up really poor, especially in the Egyptian area and southern in Cairo, she probably had to find a way to like get food. She had to find a way to do things, get money for her family. So as we'll talk about a little later, that she, I feel like that was like a pattern in her life, and we'll talk about it coming
also,
up.
So. Yeah, also like unprocessed like childhood trauma, which like 100% she went through. Like, I mean, poverty's traumatic enough, you know, like that's hard enough on folks growing up, and will affect you. But like also with the way her dad was and like all of that stuff, I can't imagine by 18 she really had a lot of time when she's been focusing on survival her whole life to like actually like process and get out of, you know, bad reactions, bad habits, like learned behaviors. And like it's gonna make really it has a tendency to make relationships challenging. Not saying people get over it all the time and it's awesome, but it's like it's a lot of work, you know. Yeah. And so yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
she had that example in her life of her father, you know, so if she thinks of it like that, then like that's the guys that, you know, it does seem like that's kind of how it happens in life. That's kind of like the guys they gravitate towards if they have that image of their father, you know, I feel like in some ways.
That's why I was asking why they got a divorce so quickly, because, you know, she finds a man, he's obviously like pretty wealthy, you know, or at least financially secure. So to me, it's kind of weird that she would divorce him when, you know, she needs that security. Like, I feel like something bad had to happen to actually get a divorce, because she obviously knew that she had nowhere to go. She didn't know English. She didn't have a job, you know. So to leave security like that, that she's been looking for her entire life, to just like, okay, bye, you know.
But at the end, that tracks, but like at the same time, like she's been used to being around that level of having security her whole life, you know, in terms of like already being at rock bottom in terms of like security in her life. So just be like, yeah, whatever, I'm gone. You know, like done this before, can do it again. Egypt was way harder than it is here. Like, I'll be fine. Fuck you. You know, I don't know. It could go a million ways. It's all speculation. But I'm just kind of being like, yeah, if somebody like has already hit rock bottom and they're like, I know what the fuck the bottom looks like, I'm cool with that. You know? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. It could be either.
Betsy Bay and I will be co-authoring a biography on her later this year where we go.
Where you go visit her hometown, visit here, where she got married, and find that American Oil Worker.
At least find his name.
His name is American Oil Worker, so finding any more information about the relationship is very hard.
Yes. It's
like we can't even get his name. But,
yeah. So, she was running from one shit show to another, coming from Egypt all the way over to Texas. Because in Texas, in 1986... there was a huge oil bust. Well, pretty much all of the 80s, but in 1986 alone, oil dropped half of its value. And as most people know, in Texas, oil is king. You know, people were losing jobs and the economy of Texas couldn't withstand it. Even at this time, the son of the vice president of the United States, George W. Bush, who would later become the president, could not pay back his loans on his oil company that he took because of the slump. We're saying less than $10 a barrel, which honestly, if we look at during COVID, we can say that's nothing because it was almost $0 per barrel during COVID. But at this time, less than $10 a barrel was terrible and crazy because all the companies couldn't pay back their loans. So here we're going to drop in Omima. She was young and beautiful, but she couldn't find a job because literally there were no jobs out there. Her new thing was, she started moving around all the time, meeting guys at bars, and then would move in with them within like a day or two. She'd go into a bar, meet a guy, and be like, you, I see you're paying for everybody's drinks. I see you're here trying to hit on these women. I'm going to move in with you. I'm going to, you know, sleep with you and start taking their stuff. So when she was living with them, she would spend their money freely. Basically like, oh, here, give me money. I need to go buy this food. Oh, hey, I need to go buy these clothes. I need to go buy this. And then when they would confront her, or she would just get really tired of them after maybe a week or two, she would rob them at gunpoint and drive away.
This girl.
I feel like she went from either.
So toxic.
I think about it and I'm like, either she went from like 0 to 100 when she got to the United States, or she had been doing this in Egypt and hadn't been caught.
Mm.
You know? It makes me wonder, because a lot of this saying is like she kept getting away with this.
Mm.
Either the guy would feel really embarrassed that he was was held hostage by her,
yeah,
and then like and tied up and stuff like that, or she was just really good at it.
You telling me that this slim, attractive Egyptian girl like took all your money and beat you up? Again, in Texas in the 80s,
yep,
yeah, good on her for finding her niche.
Yeah,
she started a small business in 1986.
She was an entrepreneur. And it's behavior like that. It's coming here and taking advantage of people's kindness and using weapons against them and moving around. That's what this country is founded on. This country is founded on immigration.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's like,
it's true.
There is nothing more American than what, and she's fleeing a country based off of trauma. There is nothing more American than her story, in my opinion. But
yep. Yeah. And she came here and
again,
she started causing trauma.
Thanksgiving. Y'all, this is a Thanksgiving narrative. What happened?
It
hey, y'all are fucking idiots and starving to death. We got you, Holmes. And then it was just like, ha-ha. And then everything went south.
This is very much a parallel to that story.
Europeans are like, thanks for the corn. And then,
and then they drove off into the sunset.
Yeah. But, yeah.
They trolleyed off into the sunset. So, while she was doing this, there was nobody else was named, but there was one man who basically was like, this is crazy. So his name was Robert Hansen. He was tied to a chair and threatened with a shotgun before robbing him. I do want to say, to skip ahead a bit, she was acquitted of these charges in court in 1990.
Hmm. Do you know on what grounds? Or
I do not know, but this would be a, that's funny. We'll talk about this later too, is that would be a theme with her being acquitted. But this will be instrumental. Robert Hansen will be instrumental in her later trial. So we'll keep his name in mind for later. Guilty.
What's the name of the lawyers? I'm drawing a blank right now. What's the name of the lawyers when they're working pro bono as a public defender?
Public defender.
Yeah. It just turns out that it was like Johnny Cochran and his like mandatory public defender days. And he's just in court. Like,
yeah,
if the gauge don't fit, you must acquit.
Yep.
Like holding up, he's like, this is clearly a 12 gauge round, but if you look at the guns that Mrs. Oil Worker owned,
yep,
they're all,
she did not have,
they're
lies,
all 20 gauge. Now tell me, how does that make sense?
How does that make sense?
God damn.
Yep. So she did this for 5 years.
Damn.
From 1986 to 1991. She went from town to town, meeting guys at bars and then taking their money. She basically went a whole longer than a presidential term, going from town to town and guy to guy, doing her best impression of Bonnie and Clyde. Besides robbing banks, she didn't do that.
She was, in her mind, she was playing both Bonnie and Clyde.
She was, yes. So, well, after all this time, she ends up in Orange County, California, where she meets, where all the money is. And there she meets one Bill Nelson. So let's talk about Bill Nelson. He was an airline pilot who owned a fleet of DC-3s and DC-46s and smuggled electronic goods into Mexico from Laredo, Texas. I do want to say at this time, Mexico had an embargo on and trade restrictions against electronics coming from the U.S. I don't know why they had that. I think they were, if usually when you do that, you try to grow your internal internal businesses using embargoes so that you can start it. But I also don't know if that was the main reason. So basically, he grew really rich from this endeavor, and he started buying fast cars, fancy cowboy boots, and a new ranch outside of Laredo.
Hell yeah.
As any good Texan would.
Hell yeah.
As any good Texan would.
Fuck yeah.
So he was described by his friends as larger than life, of course, because, you know, everything's bigger in Texas.
Aww,
due to how he spent his money.
Cute.
Yeah. He always wanted the best things. And as a pilot, he was described as, quote, "He was one smooth pilot. He was damn good. These guys
awesome.
Would fly down to Mexico at night with their lights out, evading radar. Once, when his old DC-3 was shot up by the Mexican Air Force, he called in his position to the airport. He was cool as a cucumber over the radio. I cannot tell you enough how much his friends thought this guy was so cool.
He sounds all so cool.
All his friends. Yeah.
I just really got to point out here the flip that will happen over the next couple of years, because we're talking about rich Americans smuggling things into Mexico, flying under the radar and being shot at. And like, boy, howdy, that flip that'll be coming around 1990.
Yep. And I just want to say how crazy it would be if you were in, and I do want to say too, these DC-3s, mm-hmm. his planes that he had a stock of were old. Mm. They weren't like brand new. So he was taking these small planes that were not brand new, that were carrying cargo, flying them over the border under the radar.
Damn.
Against Mexican air. Basically, they could have said, oh, we're getting invaded, and shot them down, which is what they were thinking. You know, they were thinking, oh, the United States is invading us, so we're going to shoot these airplanes down. So that they could stop the smuggling, because the trade embargo was going on at this point.
God
so.
Damn it. We already gave you the Southwest. Leave us alone.
Yeah, we weren't at NAFTA yet. So
it's true.
So as all good things come to an end, he eventually was arrested and convicted of conspiracy to smuggle, you guessed it, marijuana into the United States. So what I guessed, I honestly don't know if he was actually smuggling marijuana or if
Probably.
He just got, yeah, he could have been, because that's what he could have been bringing back, to, you know, to make both times worth it. But it could have been that they just found a way to convict him of something, and the easiest way to do it be like, oh, at this point, they're like, well, let's just say he's smuggling marijuana into the United States. So, never was clear.
I feel like everyone
but
did
he was,
that back in the day. It was mm-hmm. like a thing everyone just did, you know?
Marijuana and coke, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was normal.
So, he actually served 4 years in Lompoc Federal Penitentiary. And in 1990, Bill's wife, who had been with him this whole time, served him with divorce papers. Yeah, so he's still in jail,
affair.
Too. No, well, yeah. But she wasn't with him yet. He hasn't met Omami yet at this point.
Okay, so this was
so
before.
This is 1990, so they met in 1991. So while he was in jail, basically, his wife served him with divorce papers and was like, yeah, you screwed up. And I mean, who knows if he was like, hey, I'm doing this, or if she was just like, well, this is screwed up. She found out when he got put in jail. So let's fast forward 1 year. Bill gets out of jail. He has a job as a messenger and part-time computer programmer at Cannon Mortgage Company. He's in the process of getting divorced, though he's not legally divorced yet. Let's enter in a smoky pool hall in Costa Mesa, California. He's throwing money around and being, you know, Bill's normal self, being the larger-than-life cowboy
yeah.
in California. Yeah. And in saunters Omaima. She's gorgeous, wearing that red dress, that dark flowing hair, blown out like she just stood in front of a huge fan for hours. Obviously, this is the 80s, so her hair is blown out. He looks at her and thinks, you're the one. And she looks at him and says, you're the one. So they fall madly in love.
K-U.
Quotations.
Emphasis on so madly.
So emphasis on madly. He is a, I just want to say, he is a 56-year-old ex-pilot. Okay, he's 56 years old. And she is 23 years old and an aspiring model and a nanny.
Oh my God.
Slash.
So
yeah, yeah. So she's saying they are 33 years apart.
All, like cultures and stuff in general, like, have just, I feel like nobody's had it perfect. Nobody's had it right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Where it's just like, pick a place in the world where they've had like a history of like a good setup around like ages. Because, like, I'm just going to say, like, 1940s, 1950s United States, you could be, like, 30-something years old marrying a 14-year-old in most of this country, you know? And it was, like, and that was considered normal, you know? And, like, I don't know. It's, to me, like, somebody gets into their, like, mid-20s, it's kind of, like, life experience has more to do with it. You know, because you can have somebody sheltered into their like 30s who's totally naive, or they just, and like clearly she had a shit ton of life experience, and she was also used to not being taken advantage of because she was on the other end of doing that. So I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah. I just want to say, like, emphasize it just because of what we'll find out later, you know, because this is a thing for her. She, especially when she was going across and robbing people, is like her neighbor or her friends were saying that this is what she did. Bill's friends were saying that, like, they've seen this happen even in just Orange County, and that she would find the older man in the bar. She would find the older gentleman in the bar and say, I'm going after him, you know, whether he was good looking or not, whether she liked him or not, she went after them. And they would be the ones that are, hey, I'm buying my friends a drink. Hey, I'm, you know, this was her thing, you know. I do want to just stress, honestly, like, so they got married within 4 weeks, right? I want to stress that Bill is still legally married to Kathy Nelson.
How can he remarry?
He can't. So I wanted to make this clear because in the stories they said that he is still legally married to Kathy Nelson. They didn't go through the divorce. She is suing him because they didn't go through the divorce
yet. Oh my God.
All of this is not known to Omaima. She doesn't know any of this is going on. He never let her know that he was married at this time. He also had kids with Kathy.
Jesus.
So he's still with his ex-wife, Kathy. So he still has kids, several kids, and his kids, some of his kids were older than Omaima.
This is literally my mom and my dad.
Mm-hmm. So I want to say something about the president of Bill's company described them as, quote, real quiet, mysterious people. And she's unquote. And then she said that he met Omaima, and, quote, all of a sudden they were married, unquote.
He was just pissed he didn't get invited to the wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was
yeah,
pissed.
Yeah, she was pissed that she didn't get invited.
Yeah, she was pissed. Yeah. Yeah. So after their wedding, they decided, there's not a lot of details on their wedding. There's not a lot of, they're actually, people did research into this and they couldn't find any record of them two actually getting married legally. So somebody dug into, because they took a road trip to Bill's family ranch in Arkansas and Texas to meet his family. So basically 4 weeks in, he's like, hey, or 4 weeks, they get married. And right after they get married, he's like, hey, let's go meet my family in Arkansas and Texas. Let's take this long road trip from California. His family, of course, they were, they didn't approve. They were basically a little speculative on her. And basically, she had to win them over. So she won them over because one of the days on the ranch, she was riding a horse and she got thrown from the horse and landed on her back.
Oh,
wow.
So instead of being, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done, thanks. I'm just going to go inside. She said, can you get me a shot of vodka and some aspirin? And she got back up on
that's
the horse.
That's what you do if you fall off.
And kept
you get
riding.
Back on.
Yep.
Nah, that's
and this lady
cool.
is the perfect
and
example
that is the
of
Nelson
that.
Way. Yep. And they were like, you are one of us.
Exactly. That's the way. And she, after that, they were like, okay, we love this girl. She's amazing. She's everything. And who better to marry Bill than a girl that falls off the horse, gets back up on after he got shot at by the Mexican government trying to drug run, basically.
At this point, they also have to be weighing the approval of the marriage with, like, Bill kind of just makes his own rules anyways. Like, we're kind of, this is just an obligatory kind of like, hey, this is happening. Like, he's going to do it. And they're like, oh, shit. Like, she's like, wee, just falling down, landing on a bunch of rocks, getting up all bloody. Like, give me a shot of vodka and an aspirin. I'm going to get back on this bitch.
That's badass.
Yeah. I would have been done. I'm just like, I would have packed it in. No, thank you.
Same thing that took out Superman. She just got back up from.
Yes.
Just saying.
Funny story. Not really funny, but that actually happened in my hometown, Culpeper, Virginia.
That's where Superman fell off the horse?
That's where Superman fell off the horse in Culpeper, Virginia.
Shit.
Yep. At the Commonwealth Park, I think it was. He was riding around. I think they had like a horse show or something. And it's a pretty big size horse show. And he just flipped off and
but look what happened got
was paralyzed
and that I think
she
I remember
lucky.
You telling I think I remember you telling me that when that happened, when that moment took place, that's when you realized I need to leave this cursed little town, and so you decided I'm never going back to Culpeper except for major holidays and family events.
Correct.
And that's a direct quote.
Direct. So, suffice it to say, they were having themselves a great honeymoon.
Yeah, they sound like so perfect for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They're a match made in heaven. So, but as we all know, honeymoons never last.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, they decided to... Dun, dun, dun. So, they decided to pack it in, and they headed home to Bill's apartment in Costa Mesa, California. We hope you are having a wonderful Thanksgiving and want to say we are thankful for you all for listening to our podcast. Please remember to like, review, and subscribe to our podcasts on wherever you get yours. Put the turkey back in the oven and make those after Thanksgiving sandwiches. And let's get back to the podcast. Gobble gobble. So now we're going to get to the fun parts. Not more than 4 weeks of being married, on the morning of Thanksgiving in 1991, Bill phoned his daughter, Margaret, and asked her if she would like to come over for Thanksgiving. She, you know, she wasn't angry at them for anything. She just politely declined. She was like, no, thank you. I'm good for today. And so what Bill said on the phone is that they were doing great. They're excited. They're ready to have family over for Thanksgiving. So suffice it to say, there was nothing wrong at this point, at least in Bill's eyes, of like anything that was going to happen in the next 3 days. So they were cooking together that day and what seemed like no ill intent. But honestly, when I read this, this made me, just like you, I think last week, almost run to the sink and puke. So there are two versions of that night, and I want to go through both of them. Because, honestly, like, we don't have versions of it that are... We have the prosecutor's version, and we have Omima's version. On Thanksgiving 1991, in the prosecutor's version, Bill was tied to the bedposts, hands and feet. And from what was insinuated, it was their normal sex games that they would play out. She walked into the room and hit him in the head with a lamp.
This is Gerald's game.
This is literally yes. Clue.
Yep. Then she continually beat his head in with an iron.
Jeez.
So much so that it broke the iron.
Ouch.
She broke this metal iron that she had and broke the handle off. Suffice to say, I think he was dead at this time. She then stabbed him with scissors and then proceeded to castrate him.
Oh my God.
She started cutting up his body into different parts. She cut off his hands and put them in a deep fryer.
What the fuck?
She...
Chicken
yes.
fingers. Sorry.
She also deep fried his head and then stuck it into the freezer.
How big was their deep fryer?
I know, right?
Huge. Huge. And then she hung most of his skinned human torso in the bathroom from clothes hangers.
She straight up flayed him?
Why?
She flayed him. The worst part of it all was that she mixed part of his hip with the cranberry sauce and turkey.
Wait, hold on. What part of his hip? Just curious, like, cause when I picture hip, I picture a bone. Like, I don't, there's like, you know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah, just the skin. She cut off his hip. Like, she cut off the part of his hip with the skin on it.
I'm sure this is like one of those cooking channel shows where you're just like, what are they doing at first? And then you're like, oh, so I'll let you go on. Sorry.
Oh my yeah. God. And this is the first yeah. time she's done this, right?
Supposedly, like, there's no other, you know, no one has said that in other parts of it that she killed anybody before, only that she robbed them. But she tied them up. So obviously there was maybe some kind of thing, but she had never killed anyone before that I could read or that was ever prosecuted or gone to court. That we know of, yeah. Afterwards, she was quoted by her court-appointed psychologist that she cooked his ribs with the barbecue sauce and said, quote, it was so sweet.
Sweet unquote. Baby Ray's. And this quote, episode is brought to you by Sweet Baby Ray's. Ray's barbecue yep. sauce. The only sauce you'll need.
Nothing was sweeter. She also said nothing was sweeter.
So she ate him.
Yeah. I do want to say that later she changed it and said that she never ate him. But they also found that the court prosecutor asked what happened to the other 103 pounds of Bill. Because
I'm not laughing at Bill, but just that question coming up in court, just like, yeah. Okay, that's fine. But what happened to the other 100 and like such a weird number, 133 yeah. pounds.
Very specific.
Yeah. It's because they in the court, they weighed him out to find like, okay, we'll get into it. But yeah.
I just real quick appreciation moment. If you were yelled at by your significant other this Thanksgiving for forgetting to preheat the oven or get the oven going the night before to get your turkey going, you know, I just want you to just take a moment and appreciate your partner's stress management skills because it could have been a lot worse.
Yep.
That's yep. all. Just I'm just saying holidays yep. are stressful and I just want everybody to maybe, you know, look over at their loved one and smile because they didn't do this to them on Thanksgiving. And it doesn't matter how bad or stressful the trip was or baking or having people over or cleaning up. There's always going to be the fights. But like, at least you're still alive and not in your partner's stomach. Anyways.
Yeah. You're
so
welcome.
I do want to add... Thank you. I do want to add that after she killed him and before she started flaying his body, she went and changed into a sexy red dress. Ooh. And put on nice bright red lipstick and a red hat. I guess when she did all this, she thought about, I don't want this to stain my dress. So how can you not see blood? She wore a red dress.
She like literally went like sexy Carmen Sandiego.
Yep.
Like she's out like for revenge, it sounds like.
It does sound like.
And this
like
is
that.
Like hella premeditation. Like there had to have been some shit going on in her. Like to think about that fast and to set up the situation to, you know, be like, oh, we about to get kinky, we about to do some sexy time shit, and then just be like, gotcha, motherfucker. And it's like she already had an iron and like, you know what I'm saying? It's just like there was, and I mean she clearly like already had recipes prepared.
Clearly. Yep.
Oh, of course. Of clearly, you know, yes. So the destruction of the body, basically her cutting him up, lasted for 3 days. Yeah. So think about it, like Thursday is Thanksgiving, right? On every year, it's Thursday. So neighbors told police after this that they heard the garbage disposal running day and night until Saturday.
Ew.
Yeah. So on December 1st, which was obviously 3 days after she had murdered him, she knocked on one of her neighbor's doors. Nobody knows that he's dead at this point.
Hey,
right?
My garbage disposal's been stuck on for three days. Could you come over and help?
Oh, God.
Yeah. I think this guy is actually like not the neighbor, but I think he is like a building or two away. So his name was Jose Esquivel. Mm-hmm. Whom she had also dated about a year before. Funny
hey,
enough.
Hey, I know this is awkward, so, but husband and I, sorry.
Yeah. So she was driving Bill's red Corvette, you know, his sexy red, beautiful 1980s red Corvette. Mm-hmm. She told him that Bill had been violently and sexually abusive to her. He tried to rape her and beat her, and that she had killed him in self-defense.
Okay.
He testified in court that day she offered to give him $75,000 and two motorcycles if he would help dispose of the body.
I mean, that's all a pretty good deal.
Yep.
That's like right? 18... I mean, billion dollars in today's economy. I just checked and did the math.
Pretty
that's
much,
like
yeah.
That's so much money.
Yep.
I would have said
that's
yes.
100 trillion hamburgers.
I would do it.
So he responded. Yeah, he responded. I mean, obviously, in most ways, people responded that he would help her, but he needed a bit of time to get a truck to help her move it, everything. But once, and he told her, "Hey, you should just go back to your apartment, wait, and like." I'll get the truck.
Garbage disposal so broke. I need your help. Sorry.
And once she had gone back to the apartment, he just called the police.
He called the police? So,
snitch. Yeah. No, I'm just
he
kidding.
Called the police. He was basically like, I do not want to be involved in a murder. I do not want to be involved in trying to hide somebody's murdered body. So,
do you even remember when you like tied me up and robbed me at gunpoint? Like, of course I'm not going to help you, idiot. Like,
yeah. I don't know if he was the one who got tied and robbed or if he just took her for some money. I don't, it didn't say in the
either,
story.
Wait,
but,
like, why was she do that? Like,
he's just sitting there and she's like, hey, are you doing anything? And he just, like, kind of half closes the door because there's a whiteboard in the background with her name on it and all these lines connecting to shit of, like, giant red letters, my revenge plan. He's like, no, I'm good. What's up? So I've been waiting for this.
Yeah, the police found Omaima in Bill's red Corvette, and she was sitting outside of the apartment building. She had trash bags in the Corvette with what had looked like human organs in them.
Oh my God, so disgusting.
I can get some money for these.
On the black market, I'm going to sell them. So they arrested her on suspicion and took her to the police station, but they at that point they could not identify if they were Bill's or even human remains at that point. because she had cut them up and mutilated them so bad. So when they asked her, there was too much barbecue sauce. So they, at this time, they didn't have a reason to go into her apartment. So they basically just took her to the police station. They asked her questions because they didn't. They didn't know if they were, if she killed somebody or if somebody killed somebody. So like this, it's was for, you know, it's amazing that they didn't invade her apartment either. But also, I don't know if they really knew Bill at this point because it's a huge county. So it's neither here nor there. So when they asked her what had happened, she started rambling on, and she would change stories while she was pacing around. She would often speak like Bill was still alive.
Mm. All right.
So that's the end of the prosecutor's story. I wanted to tell her part of the story. Her part of the story is much shorter because, I mean, you already kind of know what happens. He's dead. Bill's dead, basically. So on her side of the story, once she was arrested, she told the police that murdering him was in self-defense, like she told Jose. She had been tied up to the bedposts and got her hand free, barely enough to hit him in the head with a lamp. And then she unbound her hands. She said that she did not remember dismembering the body.
Okay.
Which is crazy. Because they all know it happened, and she saw the remains, but she said she just did not remember dismembering his body.
Wow.
She also showed them, she also showed them that she had cut wounds on her face, hands, and breasts. Mm. And she said these were defensive wounds. These were things that, like, I was trying to save myself, and if he was strangling me, if I didn't kill him, he would have killed me. In another point in this story, as I said, she was rambling on, she claimed that ancient Egyptian spirits had commanded her to kill him and acted through her.
That we're going to have to check the dates, but I'm pretty sure Golden Child with Eddie Murphy had just came out around that same year. And Westerners' views of any other type of religious practice were just like, oh my God, they can do that? Like so that yeah. And a self-defense plea in Texas, that's a solid case.
Yep.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Like, that's a very... Sure. And we have a long tradition in America. Look at any hearing in Congress. If you just say, I don't recall or I don't remember, you can get away with anything. You literally just say,
yes, you can.
I don't recall that. And they're like, it was yesterday at 2 o'clock when you said, I'm recording this so I can remember this later. And, yeah, I don't remember that. Like, yep. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
This is a solid
story of my life.
Yeah, this is a solid, like, defense. I'm here. I'm here for it.
Yep. The DA, great job, honestly. So the Egyptian spirits, so in ancient Egypt, you could not continue to the afterlife if your body was cut up.
Mm.
So in her point of view, and the thing of this is that the Egyptian spirits basically said he's evil, he's raped you, he's physically abusive towards you, we don't want him going to the afterlife, so you have to cut him up so that he can't continue to the afterlife.
Oh my God, that's intense.
That's her part of the story. So we're going to go into the details of what the police found. Though she made these claims that she was raped and tortured, after she was arrested, she was taken to the forensic hospital and found that she did not have any evidence of sexual trauma from this time period. Obviously, she had a lot of sexual trauma from her past.
She was literally circumcised.
Like, yeah. They were just talking. Yeah.
What?
So she has a lot of sexual trauma from a long time ago. But they didn't find that she was raped or tortured at this point. I guess at least they couldn't tell probably for maybe like at least a week back. I don't know how the whole forensic part of that goes, but
it's still one of the hundreds of millions of rape kits that are not being processed in the United States. But sorry,
pretty much. Yeah, it's still in the queue. And as far as the wounds on her chest, face, and hands, the forensics found that they were more in line not with defensive wounds, but more consistent with injuries sustained while cutting up a body.
All right.
I'm only presenting both sides of this because it was just so interesting, especially from a lady that had, and in most of the view, had never killed before. They also, the forensics evidence too, when they found Bill's body and all the parts, they said that he had been cut up with surgical precision, like somebody who had done it before.
Was, this would be interesting to see if there was any cold cases from the years that she was in the U.S. and like kind of going around, and like, you know, she had her little process of like hitting up rich folks, ghosting them, this and that and the other, like, or not ghosting them, but like robbing them and, you know, stuff like that. But like, I wonder if there's any lead up to this.
It makes me think that there was some lead up, just kind of looking into it, because I don't know, all of the people that knew Bill described him as just a fun loving person. And obviously, you know, that happens a lot. Your friends are going to say the best about you, but also the people that knew both of them said that they were a very loving couple.
They were like the perfect.
Yeah. Match. And even Bill's ex-wife, yeah, she like was divorcing him and suing for a divorce, but she said he was never violent. He was never physically violent, sexually violent towards her, and that she had never heard of either of them being violent towards each other, you know, as much as she was privy to their relationship. So this was like a crazy amount of surprise to everybody. I mean, a lot of people said for her, it was surprising that she did this, but it wasn't surprising that she tried to get money. That she was doing that from beforehand.
So she just blamed it on the gods.
She blamed it on him was the biggest thing. She blamed that she was forced to because he was raping her and abusing her. So that was her defense for this. So we'll get into the trial. On December of 1992 through January of 1993, she went to trial. It took the jury 6 days of deliberation to acquit her of first-degree murder.
What?
She was not convicted of first-degree murder.
Okay.
Even though she had his organs in the car next to her, everything pointed that she did this. She was convicted, however, of second-degree murder.
So how does that even make sense? Does she have, like, a really good lawyer?
I don't know.
Could you... Okay, so I know... I don't remember what the degrees stand for. I think first degree is, like, premeditated and, like, all that jazz, right? I forget what second degree means.
Yeah, first degree is intentional, and the accused person has to have premeditated it. So second degree, unplanned intentional killing, and a death caused by reckless disregard for human life. So basically, if you get an accident and you're drunk or something like that, that's second degree murder. Or you're a crime of passion would be a second degree murder. And is what they, I think that that's what they kind of, that's kind of what they boiled it down to, is that it was a crime of passion, that she was defending herself. And at the moment, because there was no other side to the story, like Bill and her were the two sides to the story, her side of the story held up a little bit more than what the prosecutors could give.
Damn.
So I do want to state this too. The deciding factor in this court case, as you should have guessed it, was our original person that was held up by Omima, whom she allegedly tied to a chair and held a shotgun point for money, Robert Hansen.
Dang. What the fuck?
He was called to court he went to court against her, I think, a year before, and she was acquitted of both those charges, and he testified saying that these scenarios fit a pattern in the present evidence, the present evidence against her. That's the only way they got second degree murder to be charged to her. I want to say that she probably had one of the best lawyers I've ever seen. So, yeah, she was sentenced to 28 years to life in Central California's women's facility in Chowchilla. So I can't like, I just look at this and I'm like, there has, in my view of it, there has never been more evidence stacked up against a person, but more circumstantial evidence because there was no witnesses.
I'm telling you, it was Johnny Cochran when he was a public defender.
Yeah. I have no idea. The only way that they got it was by setting up circumstances to say that she fit this pattern and the present evidence was there. That's the only thing she got hit with.
Wow.
So she was up for parole in 2006. She was denied. Then she came up for parole in 2011 and was also denied.
Does it say why she was denied?
Because the second time was because they felt like she did not take responsibility for the murder.
Interesting.
Yep. She still was saying that it wasn't because of me. So, yeah, she's in prison for a while. So in 2026, 4 years from now, almost 3 years from now, she might come up for parole and get out. When we talked about earlier how he was much older than her, he had a lot of money. And she saw that. So in jail, she got remarried to another older gentleman, a 70-year-old, and they had several conjugal visits. He recently passed away and then left her with a lot of money.
Good for you, girl.
So now when she gets out of jail, she will have a buttload of money waiting for her.
Wow. What a hero.
And right?
Like, what a comeback. Who is this girl?
I want to say that this is the greatest American story never told.
Kind of, yeah.
She went... There is no difference in my mind between her and the guy who went to jail in 19... The Wolf of Wall Street guy. They basically did the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she's now rich. You know, she's richer than when she went into jail, which... When he went into jail, he got all his money taken away, and then he came out, and he became rich again. So he became richer than before. So I want to say that they are the same person.
She really, that was a very good metaphor, a metaphorical foreshadowing when she fell off the horse, got back on. You know, she's just like,
yep.
Yeah, this. I'm sorry, but I'm going to get through this again. Grew up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in Egypt. This is easy as fuck. Like.
Yes, this is super easy. So that's our Thanksgiving Day Eats for today.
And if you want to write her, you can find her at Orange County Crit. No, I'm just kidding.
Damn. And we never want to make fun of the victim. And we're not trying to do that. Because Bill was murdered and eaten on in between 3 days of Thanksgiving and the day after Black Friday, Saturday. So... I can just imagine that if she was in this time, she would be sitting on the computer looking at Amazon, sitting there eating a little hip bone barbecue, taking a bite of it, you know, drinking her coffee on Black Friday, sitting there buying, what can I buy with this money of his? I need to sell his red Corvette so I can make some more money.
Ah, I do need a new garbage disposal.
Yeah, now that I've broken this one.
It is so crazy to hear that too, because the neighbors, like, they didn't do anything. Like,
well, what can they
did? They didn't hear any. They didn't hear any, which is, I think, is crazy. Is none of the neighbors came forward and said they heard any screaming, they heard anything. And from what I've seen in like the marks on his, so the reason they knew that they found that he was tied to the bed. Is that he had these, when they found his hands were deep fried. So obviously they couldn't tell if he had marks on his hands, but they saw marks on his feet that he, which are consistent with being tied up. So they think also that that's why they said that these were kind of normal sex games for them, is that he was tied up and he had marks around his feet, but they didn't find any marks around her legs, feet, or anything else like that. So when they asked her for her side of the story, she said she was tied up. So that's one of the reasons why they didn't believe her at that point.
And she, I mean, and it was like circumstantial or whatever, like, but did have a history of literally tying people up after like having sex, or like in some way the like the sex and then tying up and then robbing, or like having her way with them in a certain way of like taking whatever the fuck she wants, or, you know, so it it tracks that maybe she's been well practiced in convincing dudes to get tied up to things, you know.
Yeah, one of the other evidence, one of the other pieces of evidence they found too, why they knew he was hit with a few of the things, he was hit in the head by the iron, is they found pieces of his hair on the iron still. So that's how they knew that she, and also found it broken, but they found that she had hit him, and they said it, when I read it, was at least 20 times in the head with the iron. So I want to say that he was dead after that. But she stabbed him right after that, which I think is just like, she's already killed him, and then she goes, I'm going to stab you with scissors.
That was a weird part that stood out to me, because it was like a moment of like de-escalation, where it was just like, haha, got you with the lamp. And like, you know, you're just picturing some like rich person's like table lamp or whatever. It's like all giant metal brass. It's like, bam. And then it's just like iron. And then it's like, all right, that's kind of escalating. And it's like safety scissors. And it's like, wait, what?
Well, you have to think about it too. It's like, she, like, you could find obviously the lamp next to the bed you're going to hit him with, right? So like that, if that's the first thing, like, okay, I can understand that. And then the iron, like, okay, that's something you can find in a bedroom, right? So you can find that in a bedroom. I would think that scissors would not be as readily available in a bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, unless she was cutting the tags off stuff. So I'm just kind of trying to think about it. It's like, okay, cool. She had scissors. And then after that, she castrated him. So I'm just like, wow, that escalated. I mean, obviously escalated very quickly. Like, I do want to say how crazy it is that they found his head frozen in a freezer.
So unnecessary.
After she had deep fried his head. Like, I don't understand what she was. I guess she probably wasn't thinking. Like, but she had three days of this. So this is what made me think why it's so crazy, is that like, it's not like she flipped out and was like, oh shit, I gotta hide all the bodies. But she thought about what she was doing, and she definitely, what they said to why she put the hands in the deep fryer is because she wanted to burn the fingertips off of him. She wasn't planning to eat
him. But also, they weren't able to find marks of him being tied up because his hands were cut off, and they weren't able to fully verify. It was more difficult for them to verify all of the bashing in the heads of that took place because his head was deep fried. So, like, that tracks.
Yeah, and it's crazy. But that she also pretty much stuck him like a pig, and she tied his body and put the torso up hanging in the bathroom, just dripping blood. I also want to say, too, that everything was covered in blood. Everything.
Like, what do you mean by everything?
I mean,
everything,
obviously, as you
like
would think so.
Apartment?
The mattress, the rooms, the clothes, the downstairs was just, everything was covered in blood. There was just dark red blood everywhere. All the trash bags that she had, because as the police went in, I want to talk about this too. As the police went into this place, they described it as literally the worst crime scene they will ever see. Some of them quit the force because they couldn't do it anymore.
Ew.
They went in there and they found trash bags of body parts and pieces of him. They found suitcases with pieces of him in there. Like, she was trying to get rid of this body.
I just picture her, like, when
like,
you said
that's
that
so messy.
when you said that there was blood on the mattress, I just picture her just like the 3 days. I was like, I can't get over it, but the 3 days that the garbage disposal was on the sink, she was trying to get the mattress. And then she's like, shit, I should have started with the body.
Like, yeah.
Damn it.
It's just like, I don't know what she was like. She was definitely trying to hide that she killed him. Obviously. And obviously, you know, as a person would. So to me, that speaks that she was premeditated about what she was doing.
But also,
but, you know, obviously you have to prove that.
Like,
court.
How, okay, she seems like she was a smart girl, but like, how do you think that, like, it's going to be easier for you to cut a body and put and make all this mess? First of all, that's like really messy, ridiculously messy. Like, it would have been easier for her to just hit him with the iron, cool, he's dead, grab his whole body and dump it in a river or a lake or whatever. Less mess, and she probably would have been fine with that, you know, and no one would know. But no, she decided to make this huge mess, make a lot of noise with the what's it called? The
garbage disposal.
And like ask her ex-boyfriend to help her with the murder. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
There's that, like, so like the whole thing around like premeditated murder, like we put a lot of faith into people being good at planning. Like, she might have just not been, she might have like really thought that this would have worked, but she just didn't fully think it through. And then she's like, fuck, the Corvette doesn't even have a trunk. God damn it. Like, you know, just like, sure. Like, I mean, the trunk's too small. Like, she might have just not been good at planning. You know, she might have really.
Obviously.
Well, well, look at it like this, too. How close she was to getting away with the murder.
I'm just surprised, like, it. If your car kind of smells like weed, right, the cops can come in, search it, bring out dogs, threaten you with all the shit like that. They literally found bags with organs in them, which, like, maybe I'm not familiar with that part of the country too well, but like a lot of people don't go hunting with their Corvette, you know, and then cut the animal and then just keep the organs and put them in some bags in their Corvette. And try. Was she still in like Victoria's Secret swag? Was she still? This whole
she
damn
was probably
time
in that red dress.
Oh
yeah.
God.
Let's not differentiate between in the 1980s and a very, very, very attractive Egyptian model sitting in a red Corvette with a red dress on, red hat, red lipstick, just sitting there being like, "Officer, I don't know what happened." She did, one of the stories that they said, one of the officers said, is that she said when they looked in the bags that Bill had killed somebody and she was trying to dispose of the parts. That's another story that they had. So there's all these stories running around too that who knows what really happened, but that was one of what the police officer said that she told him when they took her in. And so another story too that I don't think was the real story. I think the police really legitimately went over there and kind of checked out when Jose Escoval said like, hey, you should come here. And they found stuff. They went to her apartment. One other story happened. They said that the only reason they went and checked the apartment was because on Monday, Bill didn't show up to work. And her, his manager, he always goes to work. And his manager said, yep. That's how they found out. One of the stories is that the manager called the police and said that he didn't show up to work, so filed him as a missing person. So that allowed them to get because they also had all these body parts, that allowed them to get the search warrant to go in and check the apartment. I don't know if that one's super true. I think that they went in and found it pretty quickly. Because obviously she wasn't let go home. She was still in custody. So I think that they had enough to go in there already to go look into it. But, a lot of people quit the force. A lot of forensics people were like, I can't, this is horrible. And she just changed stories so much about everything she was doing, about everything that she said. So it was a very hard to read the situation for most of the people that were on the ground. for listening to the Black Cat Report and our episode on Omaima Nelson. This episode made me hungry. Ugh. We are hard at work for getting our December lineup together and can't wait to show you what's in store. So remember to subscribe so you can get alerts when new episodes are out. We hope you had a Merry Thanksgiving, and just remember, don't eat your significant others. That's what the turkey's for. We'll see you on the other side.